Hi, I'm Michael. I'm a recovered alcoholic. It is a good view up here. I was curious. I usually walk by the podium before I do something like this just to get an idea. But yeah, it is a good view. So thank you very much for asking me to do this. I typically would spend a lot of time where I'll think about what I want to say. But I haven't done it just on 10, 11, and 12 before. My sobriety date is May 16, 2016, so I'm the baby of the group. 25 years does impress me. It does. Before I went through this book, I couldn't put together more than a few months. Before I get going, I'll just kind of tell this story because it came to my mind. I was about 60 days sober, and the way that my home group and my sponsorship lineage goes through this is that we get out and we get into treatment centers and facilities right off the bat. So I was like 60 days sober, and you know, all the people that I was up on the panel with were 2, 3, 4, 5 years, stuff like that. And I was like, man, I'm only 60 days sober. What am I going to tell these people? How am I going to influence these people with all of my great wisdom? And you know, I'm inherently selfish, so I'm in a facility with people dying, and I'm only thinking about how I'll look. But I shared my sobriety date, and it was, you know, just a few, weeks, really. And I remember after we were done, a guy came up from the facility, and he was like, "Man, I can't believe you have 60 days sober. Like, how did you make it 60 days?" And like, that was the moment when, like, this whole thing really came to life for me, and it was like, wow, it was amazing. That's what we do. That's what I was taught to do. My home group is the Firing Line Group. We're a little big book study in St. Petersburg, Florida. I live in Largo, Florida, but in Pinellas County, my experience is that there isn't always a lot of big book studies and a lot of line-by-line studies, so I do travel a bit to get to my home group. We have started, I'll just do a shameless plug really quick, just in the event there are drug addicts that may have snuck in the back door. We have started a Drug Addicts Anonymous meeting where we read the big book with drug addicts, and it's in Seminole, Florida. It's called the Are You Done Group. There's really nowhere to put the information on it yet, so if you're ever interested and you're in the area, you know, I'd be more than happy to give you the information. It's really phenomenal. We meet, and there's halfway houses all around the church, so it's usually a few of us who have been through the work and an obscene amount of newcomers all the time, and it is, you know, I look forward to that more than just about any night of the week. I do have a sponsor. My sponsor was actually supposed to talk tonight, but he had a baby a couple of days ago, so you got stuck with me. So I'll do my best. My sponsor, some other guys, some of those guys sponsor other guys, and some of those guys sponsor other guys. And I stay connected to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous through that process. It's a blessing. Before I start on step 10, I'll just kind of give a little bit of insight on where I came at it from. I met a guy in the rooms years ago who walked around with this big book all the time. He quoted, you know, he could dissect it in any meeting, and his life was amazing. And so when I came back, I knew who I wanted to help me because I had seen what it had done in his life. And so I reached out to him, and I was like, hey, you know, and I was done. Like, it was either this is going to work or I'm, you know, checking out. Like, that's where I came at this program with. And I reached out to this guy because I knew that he knew what we should do. And I asked him to show me exactly how he did what he did. Because I saw him in a treatment center years ago in California, and he had stayed sober all those years, and I hadn't. So I reached out to him, and I asked him to help me, and the first thing that he did was he asked me my address, and that day he drove from St. Pete Beach to Largo, which in the middle of rush hour traffic was about an hour, and he came and picked me up, and he sat down and he qualified me, like what was mentioned in the first talk. And we spent a lot of time going through this book and sharing experiences that ensured that I should be here. He took me through this book really, really quickly and very line-by-line detail do exactly what it says. I had always done everything really slow, so when I thought about steps 10, 11, and 12, I always thought that I needed a certain period of time to get to that point, as if, like, I'll work a step a month, and in 10 months, I'll start step 10. He explained the sense of urgency to get up to this part as quick as possible. We ripped through the book, we hit it line by line, and within 2 weeks, I had started the amends process, and within 2 weeks, everything about me had changed. Like, I had heard forever, like, if you, you didn't get sick overnight, you're not going to get well overnight. And I had this years of just awful. And then all of a sudden, in 2 weeks, I go, you know, we go through, we do the inventory, I start making amends to my stepfather, to my family, to my work. And then within 2 weeks, everything about me had shifted, like, just enough. And it wasn't just me that knew it. Everybody around me saw it. Like, you know, I'd walk into a meeting and I wasn't the same guy anymore. And my family would, they could see I had 2 weeks sober 50 million times, but this time they could see me and they knew there was something different about me. You know, and I could feel it and I was excited. You know, like, sales is the transfer of enthusiasm, and I was excited about recovery and I wanted to do this. So I made some amends. And my thought was, well, then I'll just go and do a bunch of meetings and share my wisdom about all of my amends, and that's the way that my sobriety will be. And then he's like, nope, we've got more work to do. There's more stuff to do here. And so we sat down to go through 10, 11, and 12. I believe we did went over in the book 10 and 11 on the same day. But I'll just read step 10, because I had some misconceptions. I always thought step 10 was what I did right before I went to bed. So I went all day, a crazy nutcase, and then right before I went to bed, I would reconcile everything and then wake up peaceful the next day, where I would meditate and then go crazy all day and do the same thing over and over again. And that was what I thought. That's what I had heard in the rooms with step 10, in a way. And if I harmed anybody, tell them I'm sorry. That's what I thought step 10 was. And my sponsor was, he's a wordsmith. Anybody that knows him, he's just one of those that you're reading something and he points out the word he knows you're going to skip. So it's the word I'm not going to pay attention to intentionally so that I don't actually have to do this. So this thought brings us to step 10. The thought of the amends brings me to step 10, which suggests I continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. I haven't always been vigorous about it. At times I've been laissez-blah. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It is not something I do overnight. It's all throughout the day. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When, and that's the word he had me circle, when they crop up, we ask God to remove them at once, step 7. We discuss them with someone immediately, step 5, and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone, step 9. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help, 12. I was told to do it exactly like that, and I still do it that way today. These things do crop up. I was so excited when I got up to this point in my recovery, and I was on fire, and I went into every meeting, and, you know, I just, like, hit this book as hard as I could, and I sponsored a gajillion guys, and it all went well for a while. These 10-step promises, talking about being in a position of neutrality, not fighting anybody or anyone or anything, all those things came true in my life. I was in this position where, like, I didn't think about picking up anymore. Like, that obsession had been removed. I was in that position of neutrality. I wasn't trying to stay sober anymore. I was just sober. You know, I was just in that position. And it was wonderful. It was great. But the problem with me is that I am not a long game guy. I'm a sprinter. And so I started doing this, and for a while, my life was just wonderful. And I just really thought that I had, you know, nothing was wrong anymore, and I wasn't going to have any problems. My life got bigger. That's what happens. Our lives get bigger, you know, and I got engaged, and I got promoted a few times at work, and it suddenly, like, where I would be watching for these things throughout the day, I started to kind of ignore some things. So I'd get resentful at somebody at work, or I'd have fear, and I'd think, like, I don't really need to do anything about this. I'll just kind of ignore it and stuff it down. And I did that for a while. And then pride really started catching back in, and I didn't want to call and talk to people about this anymore, about things that were going on with me, because I'm the spiritual guy now, and I shouldn't be having resentments, and I shouldn't be having fears, and I shouldn't be having all of this. And then the, you know, what it talks about on page 85 about letting up on a spiritual program of action and resting on our laurels, my whole sobriety became the things that I did when I was 6 months sober, like the amends that I made and the way I used to meditate and all the guys I had sponsored at some point. And you know, that malady came back really bad because I wasn't current anymore. It was a struggle for a long time because I didn't want to tell my sponsor about, you know, what was going on, you know, that I was being judgmental and that I'd walk into a room and everybody was looking at me, you know, and they were talking about me and they were, you know, they were thinking things. And I always had this feeling of impending doom for a while. So, you know, I finally broke down because it was getting to a point where I was getting really squirrely. You know, and since then I have continued to work at this thing as good as I can, because they are going to come up. I am not enlightened. I continue to have these things come up, but I have a way of dealing with them today. Like I didn't know how to live in the world, you know, this gives me an opportunity to stay current. So that went along with step 11, with prayer and meditation. We started that really at the same time. We started it all at the same time, but I had a lot of really weird ideas about meditation, and they didn't really line up with the book very well. When I first started this, I was kind of on board with the idea, but when we went through this with the book, it was like it didn't really make sense to me. So I did a lot of different types of meditations on different apps and things like that, but it was it didn't really line up. The nightly review was what we, you know, it what we started with, and it says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? So I'm just looking over the same thing again. That I did all throughout the day. Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? Was I kind and loving towards all? I have never said yes to that. There's always something that I did. But one day, maybe. Were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others, which, you know, thank goodness for that, because I can really drift and get hard on myself sometimes. But, you know, I lost my train of thought. I always wake up every day, and I didn't really know, like, how the day was going to go or what I should do, and I kind of woke up and I felt very lost, you know, and with meditation, it allows me to stay present, you know. I can stay present throughout the day, and I don't feel that way anymore. So, yeah, I'm a little nervous, by the way. I'm not going to lie. I'll just 10-step a little with you all. I do have fear. I felt wildly inadequate about 10, 11, and 12 at first. You know, I wanted 1, 2, and 3. Because that's my bread and butter. You know, that's what I can do. Which is amazing because this is where I live my life today. Like, I live in 10, 11, and 12. I have to do this all the time. I am sober because of the maintenance and condition of my the maintenance of my spiritual condition. That's why I'm sober. It's my responsibility to do this. It's my responsibility every day to wake up and ensure that I do the things I have to do to stay connected. I go through the book, I read, you know, exactly what it says. I say the prayers. I love the fear prayer. God, please, you know, remove this fear from me and direct my attention to what you'd have me be. So I have been fairly consistent with that because I don't do well without it. But it's my responsibility. It's my responsibility if I have inventory that's come up to discuss it with somebody immediately, not 3 weeks from now like I usually do, like I used to do. And then I have to do that nightly review. I've been very undisciplined in my life. Alcoholics are very undisciplined. And this is the way that God disciplines me. And when I do it, when I'm consistent and disciplined, my life goes extremely smooth. I can always tell how I'm doing with prayer and meditation based on my level of energy, because I don't tire so easily, because I'm not trying to run the world. Because it's a lot. There's a lot of things out there to try to run. There's a lot of people, you know. Thank you for laughing. I tried a lot of different things with meditation. I burn sage. I'd use those meditation bowls, things like that. I've read a lot of spiritual literature. I've done a lot of that kind of stuff. And for a while, it was really cool and it was really exciting. And then for a while, it became fodder for my ego that I could walk into a meeting and ask everybody else how much they meditate, and give them this, if it wasn't up to my standards. And so I try to keep this really simple. I do have a few books that I read on top of and never instead of what's in the big book. And then I just sit in silence and I just ask God to show me what I need to see, and thank you for what you've given me. Thank you for my life. Fill me with your love and let it flow through me and into the lives of those about me. Those kind of conversations I used to ask to God, make me feel better. God, keep me sober. God, make this job interview go well, and then I just try to keep it really simple today, because my voice and God's voice can sound a lot alike, and so I'm very grateful for that. My sponsor is, always pointing me towards different literature, and a lot of the guys that I work with are too, and I enjoy it immensely. Now, with step 12, which is really what I wanted to talk about, when I went through this process and I was like 2 weeks sober, and my sponsor, we went through steps 10 and 11, and I pretended like I understood what he was talking about, even though I didn't really, but I've learned since then a lot. We got up and we started reading Working with Others, and I thought that I had to have some period of time that I needed to be sober, because I needed to really have an immense amount of experience and knowledge and wisdom to be able to help anybody, is what I thought. And I remember I was 2 or 3 weeks sober, something like that. And he texts me and he says, hey, are you going to Winmore tonight, which is a facility that we would go to down in Largo to carry the message. And I'm like, of course, anything AA. I have like 10 commitments a week now. But I always went along with these guys, and I'd usually go last, and I would just steal whatever they said and kind of morph it, which I heard a lot of good stuff I get to take to Largo now and pretend like I'm, thought of. But I showed up to this Winmore facility, and I get there, and there is nobody there but me. I'm sure that's like the oldest trick in the book. And I had just this amazing hour of talking with the clients and, explaining to them my experience and lining it up with the book. And everybody was so excited about it. And it was really this like powerful hour that I had at like 2 or 3 weeks sober that I didn't think I could have. And I would like to say that everybody there stayed sober and they asked me to sponsor them, but I had one person at the end come up and say, "That was really great, man. I'm glad that's working out for you." And then just turn and wander into the bedroom. But that's what I've done. I've struggled at times with 10 and 11 early in sobriety. My focus, I was a whole lot of 12-step work. bunch of commitments, going into facilities, bringing this book in, sitting down with guys, reading through it. It really kept me in a sort of a protective bubble. Like I was just doing so much, and it was thrilling. It was really cool, and I started to see this fellowship of men and women building up around me through sponsorship, because I'd sponsor some, those guys would sponsor some, my sponsor would sponsor, you know, and it's just like you had this root and all of these people suddenly staying sober through the Big Book, which was not something we really had a lot of Big Book sponsorship around the area, and you see all of these guys staying sober and just doing this deal and just walking into facilities, you know, and throwing the Big Book at everybody, and it was really powerful. And I felt very connected for the first time in my life. I felt connected to other people. I felt connected to a God I did not believe in 2 or 3 weeks prior to that. And it was really an amazing experience. But it was just, I had a lot of free time, so I could kind of do it that way. And it was really cool. And then I had some experiences with my family. At about a year sober, my mother, who is 50 years old, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, which just felt cruel, you know? Just felt like how could this happen to this beautiful 50-year-old woman? But what I was really thinking was, how could this happen to me? Because I just got sober, and I spent 20 years ruining this woman's life, and now I get sober, and she ain't gonna know who I am in a few years. And how dare you let that happen to me? And I was incessant about it. And I would go into meetings and share incessantly about how torn up I was. And I couldn't even leave work, you know, because I was just so like wrapped up in it. And I'd call my sponsor and I'd tell him about it. And I'd tell him about it. And I'd call him again the next day and I'm still really upset, you know, and this poor, sweet soul. And then one day I think he just had enough of it. because I wasn't heading anywhere with it. And I call him and I tell him, and he's like, I've got this guy I need you to go meet. His name is Brandon. And he lives in, you know, off 4th Street or something. And he's really bad. he's a tough, tough case. And I'm like, whatever, fine. You know, I need more me time here. I need to work some things out. But he's like, nope, go help him. And I go and help him. And then later that day, my buddy calls me and he says, I can't go to Safe Harbor tomorrow night. Can you cover my commitment for me? And I'm like, sure. Because I always just say sure. That's just kind of my way of doing things. And so I go to Winmore, too. But I show up at this Brandon gentleman's house, and it is nuts. Like, I'm thinking, like, oh, man, like, what have I just kind of walked into? Because he's, you know, not sober, clearly. And he's big, you know, he's like this big guy, and his wife is there. And she's, you know, she answers the door, and he's sitting on the couch, and you can tell he's coherent enough, so we'll do a little talking about this. And it was just this amazing thing, because his wife would hover in the background close enough to hear what we were talking about, because she was so terrified of the state that he was in. But the point I'm trying to get to with this is that for that hour, I didn't think about me once. It didn't matter about the stuff with my family. It didn't matter, you know, that I was having all these issues. For that 1 hour, it was about trying to help this guy see something, trying to share my experience with him. He did not stay sober, I do not believe. If he did, I didn't know. But it didn't matter, because I did, you know, and that was just sort of an amazing thing that really drove home that this is my answer, like this is what I need. I covered the Safe Harbor commitment the next night, and I walked in, and there's this big, huge dude. I mean, big, and he's got this big, like messy thing going on, and he sticks out. It's like there's like a light shining on him. And I'm trying not to make eye contact with this guy while I'm speaking. And then towards the end of the meeting, he raises his hand and he's like, I'd like to talk to you about getting a sponsor. And I was like, oh, no. But, you know, I say sure. Because everything in Alcoholics Anonymous is too big for me. and it keeps me close to God. So when I do stuff like this, or when I get the tough case, or when I have to cover the commitment, or when I have to do any of that stuff, it's too big for me. So I always have to go through God to do this. So I'm like, sure, you. And I was taught to go through these steps really, really quickly. We do not lag. That's the way that I take guys through it, word by word, through this book, as quickly as we can. And I met this guy, and he didn't ever want to go anywhere. Like, I thought, let's go sit at the coffee shop or something and do some reading. And he didn't want to do that. So we would sit in my car in Safe Harbor's parking lot, and it would slant a little because of how big he was. And we would read through the big book, and he would argue and argue and argue. And it would just be to the point where I'd be like, you know what? That's enough. I can't take this anymore. You go think about what you're saying here. He kept calling me. So I was like, well, sure, I'll show up. You know, I want the shiny, cool, on fire, young sponsee, not, you know, this guy. That's the guy that I want. And we were sitting in the car, you know, and he had done his fist step. Or his four step, and we were going over his fifth step, and his four step was like on index cards. I was like, there's no way this guy's gonna stay, like, there's like no effort here, you know? I want like a journal. But there was this moment where I saw something in him where I saw that change occur, like with like one resentment, you know? It was like, it was really amazing. And I saw this guy in a matter of months after that. Go from a guy who had just attempted suicide, was living in Safe Harbor, had a little bag of clothes, incredibly overweight, to a guy that, you know, he went to a halfway house and he got a bike and he started losing weight and he started sponsoring guys in this halfway house and he started chairing meetings and speaking at meetings like this, you know, and then he moved to Ohio and he to be closer to his grandkids, and he got a full-time job there and an apartment, and he got his license back. And it was the first time that I could see Alcoholics Anonymous work in somebody else's life, and I didn't have to do anything other than show up and carry this message and walk them through the actions. I couldn't make them do any of it, but it was the first time that I saw this program work in somebody else, and I got hooked on that feeling. It changed me, because I was useless when I got here. You know, I didn't have anything. And to be able to do that and be a part of that was truly amazing. I don't know, you know, I've lost contact with him. He's doing, you know, he's one of those guys, you call him and he's like, you know, I'm sweeping the floor, and I used to get mad at it, but now I know I'm sweeping the floor for God, you know? Like those kind of guys, and I'm like, oh man, I'm really selfish. I've got a little bit. Well, I got like 15 minutes left. I'm a quick talker. We started another big book study in a treatment center in downtown St. Pete called West Care. We had a commitment where we were going in and bringing in our, you know, panel and spit and fire, and you know, and it didn't, we wanted to try something different, so we started a big book study in this all-men's treatment center with like 120 guys, and then five or six of us would bring in a meeting, and I kind of expected that this would go like way over these guys' head, and they would just want to go out and smoke cigarettes the whole time, and they really weren't interested in what we were talking about, and I could not have been more wrong. That was about 3 years ago. We've been through the book in this facility like multiple times. It's like a freaking watering hole for newcomers. It's amazing. I guess there's something about sitting in jail sober for a long period of time and then sitting in a facility for a long period of time, just enough to have that spiritual malady really grinding at you to either say, like, I want some help. But, you know, we get a lot of these guys. And there'd be like five or six of us, and you'd end that meeting and you'd get like seven, eight, nine guys. Hey, man, I need a sponsor. Hey, man, do you have an extra big book? Hey, man, I've seen what this has done for this guy. I want to be a part of it too. I want to try this. You know, I've seen Jesse change. I've seen Ryan change. I've seen all these guys in this facility suddenly staying out of trouble, and things are going well. And I got, you know, it was like this amazing, like, out-of-body experience where you'd walk in and you'd be like, okay, I sponsored him, and I can't get any sponsees anymore because he's sponsoring them all now and he's working for them all now. You know, and it was an amazing thing, and all of these guys would get out and they were staying sober, which was even like more incredible, was, you know, seeing these guys take this program into their lives and repair their lives and to like stay connected with them was amazing. You know, and it's gotten me through a lot. You know, working with others is the only thing that will ensure immunity from drinking for me. I can meditate myself out of AA. You know, I can write 4 steps incessantly. I can go to a gajillion meetings and I can speak all over the place. But nothing will ensure immunity from drinking more than intensive work with another alcoholic. And I have experienced that. I thank God I have not gotten to a place where a drink looked like a logical idea. But there have been plenty of times where, this guy in this facility hadn't asked me to sit down and talk with him or, you know, something like that, then I don't know if I would be here today. You know, I'm very, very grateful for that. I've learned through just my short 3.5 years not to chase drunks. That was a trouble for me because I have this ego that tells me I need to save the alcoholic population, and that if you all just listen to me, the man with the answers, you know, you'll stay sober. I tried sponsoring my best friend. Did not work well. But, you know, that's something that we learned. We read through Working with Others with my sponsor, and then he closed it, and he was like, now go do it. I was like, what? Like, I need a little bit. He's like, just go do it. Just go out there, you know, show up at a facility, reach out your hand, talk to newcomers, and just go do it. There's a prayer in A Vision for You where I ask God to show me how I can help the man who's still sick, paraphrasing, obviously. And I would, every time I say that prayer, it's like I get bombarded with it. But, you know, I'm just truly grateful for this. I'm trying to not philosophize about a lot anymore and just put down my head and just work, you know, and just try to help God's kids. I went through a period where I thought I was so spiritual that if I walked into a room, everybody would have to bow to me, and I'd have I used to walk around work with no shoes on and a meditation book readily available for all to see. I was weird. And then I met with this old-timer, and I would always plug him about meditation. I'd be like, what do you think about this deep thought I just thought about, you know? And then he finally just looked over, you know, looked at me, and he was like, you know, this is about helping the next drunk. Like, that's what it's about. It's not about me and my deep thinking and my ability to philosophize really incredibly about something. It's about showing up and helping the next drunk. Because when I reached out to my sponsor, he drove like an hour while having a fiance and full-time in school, going for his doctorate and all of these different things. He drove an hour out of his way. He could have told me, you know what, there's probably plenty of people in AA between where you live and where I live who could help you. But he didn't do that. He drove an hour out of his way. He didn't make me call him 10 times to prove that I was willing, you know. And he called me at times when I didn't want to reach out because I was so terrified that if I left my bedroom that I would not make it sober those first few weeks. He called me, you know, to make sure that I was doing okay. He sat down. He took the time and walked me through this and introduced me to this way of life, to an incredible way of life. Because that was his responsibility, and he knew it. And he knew that he was ensuring his sobriety. You know, so I've gone through a few periods where I get, you know, I'm sober and I want balance now. I need balance in my life. And there's just, you know, too many newcomers. And what I need is a me night and self-care and things like that. But it's my responsibility to show up, you know, and to help the next guy, because that's what was given for me. When it sits inside and I'm not giving it away, this stuff rots and gets really bad. You know, but if I can show up and just try to help somebody and do actions contrary to my way of living life, then, you know, that connection with God is, it's amazing. It's not always there. At times I have to seek really, really hard to find it. I don't wake up every morning feeling just amazing all the time. At times I have to work really hard. Sometimes I have to take extra time in the morning to talk to God. I have to pause more throughout the day. And then I need to sit down at night and we need to talk about how the day went. When I do those things, all sorts of remarkable things happen, as it says. When I got sober, I was living in the parking lot of where I work now, and I file their taxes. Ridiculous. I was 100% undateable, absolutely undateable. My family life was ripped apart by me, 100% by me. My finances were crazy. I too owed the IRS an awful lot of money. You know, and through doing these things, through constantly trying to stay current, reaching out to newcomers, seeking God, you know, my life has absolutely changed. I'm full-time in school, full-time student, full-time job, fiance, family back in order, like all of those things. I even got a credit card, and I've had the same address for over a year. Yeah. So I'm just trying to take this close to 11:50 now, because I'm quick at times. If you're new, which I guess some of you are, the most important thing for me that I heard, because I came to a lot of speaker meetings before I eventually stayed sober, you know, and I heard people talk in depth about the steps and all this stuff, but the most important thing that I always remembered was that you don't ever have to drink alcohol again. Like, there is a way out in which we absolutely agree. Imagine getting five people to agree on dinner, you know, and everybody in here. You don't ever have to drink alcohol again. I was a guy who could not drink, and I'm a guy that gets 2 months sober, and I go back out and ruin my life again. And this program, particularly with steps 10, 11, and 12, which started extremely early in my sobriety by today's standard, you know, have kept me in a position of neutrality, and I've grown a relationship with a power that I don't understand, and I've been allowed to give that back to other guys. And it's here. Like, it's literally, it's here. It's that simple. You know, so I want to thank you very much for asking. I hope I made sense. You know, God bless you all. Thank you.